That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award, Irish Podcast Awards.
Welcome to episode 190 of That Great Business Show, home of great business tips, insights, and opportunities on every episode, delivered in our commute-friendly package, or on board Aer Lingus Longhaul, where we are their podcast partners. I'm Conall O'Mora and Fáilte Isteach. On this episode, three great interviews, backing women ventures from just €2,000, backing a world-first ordering system for the food industry, and we're back with another Business 101, thanks to backing from Big Red Cloud Accounting Software. Unlock the full potential of your business with Mentors Work, Ireland's award-winning, fully government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter the sector or size. Mentors Work will help transform your business by providing tailored guidance through one-on-one mentoring sessions, upskilling workshops, as well as networking opportunities. Together with your mentor, you'll also craft a customized six-month business plan to propel your business forward. Try it and test it, and already empowering over 3,000 Irish businesses, register for free today on mentorswork.ie. He is CEO of Lots & Co., a small but growing chain of high-end grocery stores. He's co-founder of Juniors, a deli and cafe renowned in South Dublin for their mega sandwiches. He's co-founder of Polly's Pizza. He's dabbled in pubs. Now, Barry McNerney is funding another business where he's also CEO. This one is called Unify Ordering. Given Barry's extensive background in the food trade, he believes he's onto something big with the world's first ordering platform for the food and drinks sector. Yep, Barry says it's a world first where they're bringing together buyer and suppliers to automate the ordering management process. Busy boy Barry, and he's also found time to join us on That Great Business Show. Barry McNerney, welcome.
Conall, thanks very much for having me.
You are a busy boy.
I am, yeah, very, very much so. But I would say now 95% of my time is dedicated to Unify Ordering because...
because everything else is just chucking off the cash.
Well, everything else is kind of well established and it's working and I have good management and all of those things. But from all of you, those years' experience working in all those different businesses, I was always surprised that, you know, I had a cash register that, and with every business, I knew exactly how much I was making in terms of turnover on a daily basis. And then every week I would know what my staff costs were because we have to submit that to the revenue. But because of the way I purchased my goods, I had no idea of actually how profitable my business was in real time.
That sounds mad.
Which is crazy. And I mean, the way, just give you an idea of how most small businesses work, they'll have quite an advanced point of sale system. And there's, you know, a huge amount of businesses in that sector now, from Square to Toast to Lightspeed, who are all competing really heavily with huge amounts of cash behind them. And they'll tell you exactly, you know, what you're selling. They can tell you, you know, what your busiest periods are, who your highest performing staff are in terms of who interacts with the till. But again, everybody's really on offense and nobody's looking after the defense. And I've had lots of times where I've had a very busy month in a business and think, oh, great, you know, we must have made loads of profit. But then because of the way we've been purchasing, you know, people aren't careful enough or they're not watching the gross profit margin, you know, and they're still ordering goods up until the end of the month. At the end of the month, I realized I haven't made any money because we weren't looking after our defense. We were all focused on trying to grow sales and marketing to the customers. But if you're not running your purchasing, you really are, you know, the quintessential busy fool if you don't have some sort of a system in place for that. So after opening all these businesses in kind of 2018, I was approached by Louis Williams, who was actually the guy who came up with the original idea for Unify Ordering. And he had the same issue. He was working in a cafe and he was sending the same orders. And so it's not only is the actual, you know, for the business owner, having no system is bad, but for the actual people on the floor, it's even worse because they're repeating the same emails day in, day out. They're, you know...
asking for more pickies or more sandwiches or more whatever, is it? Or
no, so generally what would happen is you'd have different suppliers of, you know, fruit and veg, for example, or you'd have a butcher or you'd have your cleaning products, whatever. Most restaurants or cafes would probably have between 10 and 15 suppliers, and that's everything from wine to soft drinks to packaging all the way through. So every day, you know, you'd be ordering with some suppliers like a fruit and vegetable or a butcher. And normally you're just reaming off the same products in different quantities for delivery the next day. It's the same job day in, And then you might have multiple people within an organization. So one person could be looking after lunch service, another person could be looking after desserts, whatever it might be, production of them. They're all like assembling these lists of different products that they need. They then hand that list over to a head chef or a manager, and then he or she generally emails it or rings it through to the wholesale supplier. So that's just the ordering part. And then you can understand all the different points along that process where this human error kicks in and over-ordering happens and people aren't, you know, watching what they actually need to order. And then when those goods are delivered, they're checked off in a physical paper docket to see if there's anything. If something's missing or broken, it's scrawled on this paper docket. Then that docket goes on a spike. And so then about a week later or 2 weeks later, a bookkeeper generally takes all those dockets and manually inputs it into a system. And then at the end of the month, it's put into a P&L and you find out what the profits are. So,
well, you kind system, of almost find out, because given what you just said there, there must be bits of paper falling through the cracks and the spike goes through the one and you think it's a seven or something. Or
absolutely. So, I mean, all of the information in relation to my purchasing is on a docket spike, or it's in a hardback book, or it's scrawled on pieces of paper. And then all these dockets are placed all over the place. Now, you know, if what would happen is somebody would take those dockets as they come in and they're inputting them into a spreadsheet or some sort of a system. But because of the nature of, you know, food businesses and, you know, accommodation and hotels and stuff, there's just not enough time. There's not enough margin to pay somebody to do those things. So it's just forgotten about. And so really Unified Ordering was built to kind of make sense of all of that chaos. And so originally what we tried to do was fix the purchasing for the food buyer, for the restaurant, cafe, bar, whatever it might be. So what we did was we created a very simple collaborative ordering platform that allowed all the different staff members to join this one account, and then they could send orders to any supplier. Now, the real beauty of it was we didn't require the supplier to be on the platform. So they all we need for it to work is that they have an email address where they receive orders. Then we were sending these orders in nicely formatted emails. And then when the emails are opened up, it sent a confirmation that we knew that the supplier had read the order, so we can guarantee the delivery of all of the orders. So this was a brilliant system. All of a sudden, you know, I had complete control and transparency over what was happening. I knew the value of the goods as they were being ordered. And it was working for us. And then the wholesale suppliers, and this is back in 2018 when the product was really quite, you know, not very well developed and the onboarding flows hadn't been fixed and all that kind of thing. And suppliers started getting in touch and said, what's the system that you're using? Because the ordering from their perspective was even more chaotic. You know, they were receiving hundreds of voicemails every evening. They'd have to send staff in at 3 or 4 in the morning to listen to it. Then, as we know, there's a lot more foreign nationals. So the person ordering could be Irish or South American. The person receiving the order could be Eastern European and all this kind of stuff. So there was just a huge amount of mistakes and errors were occurring. So what we were able to do is we went in and looked at what the supplier's process. We were able to digitize their product brochure. So, you know, formerly product brochures were like these, you know, booklets that were printed at great expense. And a lot of the time, as soon as they came out the printing presses, they were obsolete because there was goods were missing. So we were able to digitize that product brochure, put it into their customers' hands 24/7. And then when those orders came back in, we were able to integrate them directly into their ERP system. They were also able to communicate new products and special offers and all that kind of stuff. So the net result was we were helping to reduce their costs in terms of printing and labor costs. We reduced the labor costs by as much as 85%. And we were helping to prevent mistakes and redeliveries. And then we were eliminating errors and all that kind of stuff. So it was just a huge win for the supplier. So the alternative for them was to develop their own ordering system. But we say to suppliers, just don't do that. Because one, if you are a small fruit and veg supplier, you know, the chances are that if you develop your own system, that means that your customers will have 15 different apps for 50 different suppliers. We say we can give it to you straight away out of the box with no upfront costs. We only charge you based on the number of orders and active customers that you have. So if it doesn't work, it doesn't cost you a lot. And really, that's it. That's what we've been doing. And it's been a huge success because, you know, we fix it for buyers and suppliers. Suppliers actually invite customers to the platform for us.
And the amazing thing for me is you say it's a world first, really.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's a lot of systems out there there is some systems out there. There's actually not that many considering the size of the space.
It's huge, isn't it? I mean, it's vast, vast, vast.
Yeah. So, I mean, each year in Ireland, B2B food purchasing is worth about 3 billion. In the UK, it's probably a bit more than 10 times that. And in the EU, it's about 10 times that again. So it's worth nearly half a trillion. That's the whole volume of the goods that are being transacted from B2B, also food and drink purchasing. So it's an absolutely huge market. But because it's so fragmented and so everybody has different systems, it's trying to create order out of all that chaos has been difficult. But
what about the other side of the world, the US of A? Do they have something similar?
We're doing a pilot in Canada at the moment in Vancouver. And if anything, they're way further behind than we are. I think in the USA, because of the way the market is, a lot of the time, the way orders are compiled over there is somebody actually calls into a restaurant and will literally fill out forms and take that.
Sounds quaint, doesn't it?
It's crazy. So the whole thing is, the businesses that we deal with in terms of the wholesale food suppliers, they're not tech savvy. No, they're bread and butter. They're bread and butter, literally, if you'll excuse the pun. They are like old school kind of market holders who've probably transferred into this business, into the wholesale business. They don't have tech experience. So I think we as a company have a really good blend where we're industry people with a tech solution rather than being tech guys coming into the industry. And I think we speak the same parlance as the suppliers that we meet. And I'm very, keen to keep that as a culture within Unify Ordering. So when we're talking to them, we're talking to them as if we're in this space with you. We understand, all the little idiosyncrasies that exist and stuff like that. So we're on your side. And I think they appreciate that.
And we are talking a lot about funding on this episode of That Great Business Show. Mm-hmm. You have chosen to go down the crowdfunding route. Now, I know you've already raised some money, yep. But you also then went to Spark Crowdfunding.
Yeah, so we were raising around $500,000 at a $4 million post valuation. We'd raised 300,000 from private investors, and it was about filling that other 200K and kind of had a look at a couple of different things, and Spark just seemed to be a really good solution for us.
And are you finding, or do you know whether the restaurant owners or the cafe owners or whatever, are they dipping in to say that they can see it?
So,
I don't know whether I've ever told you this, but Ross Lewis, formerly of Chapter One, mm-hmm. was talking to me about it, and he uses the system, or they are using it, he's a believer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, this is, we've about 15% of the complete overall Irish market. I'd say...
1.5, is it 15?
1.5% of the entire Irish market. I would say within the Dublin region, I would say well on approaching 50% of all of those businesses are using Unify Ordering to some capacity. They might be using it for a couple of suppliers, or some of them, I think Ross Lewis in his Italian place, are using it really quite heavily. So they would use it for all of their suppliers and for all of their ordering. So I think what people don't know is that it's a huge part of the Irish industry already. I mean, we have lots of really big suppliers, leading names like Coca-Cola and Keelings, LaRouche Foods, which would be one of the biggest suppliers.
We know their trucks.
That's it, exactly. What I find really interesting, I was walking down Camden Street today and I looked down, I saw an FX Buckley truck driving past me, and I'm pretty sure that the goods on that truck were ordered through Unify. I saw another fruit and veg for a company called Nugent's. They're on Unify. I saw another truck for Connolly Catering. So
that's very
actually
pleasing,
huge,
isn't it?
It's all happening, but nobody really knows about it, So like, we're having a huge impact. The supplier businesses that we work with, we've fundamentally transformed how they operate. They're able to downsize their back office. They're able to focus on branding and marketing. They have all of this information at hand about who's purchasing within these individual businesses. All of this stuff that they didn't have. A lot of the time when you give somebody something, they very quickly take it for granted. Like, it's always been there, but without us being there, we're providing huge benefits for them. And I suppose on the buyer side, we monetize the supplier side first. So the supplier side, we're really strong. We're about 95%, through building this really amazing buyer product, which I think is going to allow buyers to fully automate their bookkeeping and stock taking functions. Huge savings there. Complete information about what they're purchasing. And at the moment, the last real part is we're integrating till systems like Square and Toast into our dashboard. So we're going to be able to tell you exactly what your gross profit is in real time, what your VAT liabilities are in any given moment, and also to see what products you're not achieving your gross profit margin on, which you need to tweak. So you're able to actually make decisions in real time to improve the efficiency of your business. And I think the potential for that, for me as a business owner, that's the holy grail. That's what I've been looking for years. I'd probably be a lot richer now if I had that system in place. So like, I'm building this for the market, but I'm also building it for myself. And this is taking on years of experience in in the industry and kind of bring it into this product.
And what about the world? What are you going to do with all the cash you're raising? Is that destined for the UK or the US or where?
Yeah, I think for the UK and for the Canadian pilot, we're going to try and use that. But primarily, it's really about rounding out the products we completely properly in Ireland, and then having a, you know, a scalable, repeatable sales model, which we kind of very much have on the Spire side, and we're finishing it off on the buyer side. And then once we have that, we're going to look to move to the UK. We have a very natural viral growth model, so I don't think it's going to be a really capital intensive growth model. We'll probably look at a market, we'll identify key players within that ecosystem, we'll sell directly to them, we'll then sell to a supplier, you know, possibly at a discounted rate, just to get the wheels going. And then it naturally works. Like, we started off in Dublin with one supplier and 40 buyers. We now have over 4,500 buyers across the country, already with 500 suppliers, transacting about 20 million euros worth of orders each month. If one thing that I can probably say is, it's probably taken longer than we expected, and because there's so many little different quirks and idiosyncrasies. I think people who are looking, coming in to invest now, have benefit of all of those years of hard work and all of those mistakes that we could have made that we didn't make.
You could make me cry.
But I mean, it's just, that's it. You just learn from, and you know, there's a huge amount of development already done, and now it's really about rounding it out and pushing it out. And that's what we're going to do. I think what we need to do really is to grow our footprint in a couple of markets outside of Ireland, whether that's the UK, North America, and grow our revenue slightly. And then off the back of that, I think we'll raise a Series A, which will allow us to really turbocharge our growth. And then we'd probably look to, you know, make some sort of an exit within the next 5 years, I'd imagine, once we have all that growth behind us.
And why Vancouver? I mean, why not Vancouver, of course, but have you got a brother or somebody over there?
No. I actually did another podcast before, the David McWilliams podcast back during COVID.
And
somebody was listening for Vancouver, and they were dealing with customers, and they were kind of from a private equity company, and they just happened to own a couple of different things, different companies. One of them was a wholesale supplier. And the problems that I was describing, they were like, this is exactly what I'm experiencing on a daily basis. And so we started with them, and then they did a pilot, and we pushed it out to a couple of different restaurants. And I can say the same problems, and it's the exact same way that the market is structured over there. So, you know, we could grow now outside Ireland, and there's actually opportunities, different requests, but we really want to perfect it here in Ireland. And then we think when we have it perfected here in Ireland, it's a much more capital efficient way to grow rather than be trying to figure out a little bit as we go in foreign markets, and that could burn cash. So we just don't do that.
Where is your development team here abroad? Where?
Well,
all over.
We had a development team that are based in sort of Eastern Europe, so Kazakhstan and the Ukraine. Our lead developer is a guy called Sergei Sokhanov. He's been working with Unify since
Working as Sokhanov.
Sokhanov. Yeah. Very good. Okay.
No, very bad.
But yeah, he's the CTO. He's a great guy. He really understands the problem, and he understands it from a technical and, you know, coding perspective. So, you know, the product is really quite strong now. I mean, I used to sell the product back in 2018, and like I said, the onboarding flows weren't working, and we hadn't figured out an awful lot. And I would go in and sell it to a supplier, and sometimes it would be buggy. But even then, they would still sign up because the problem that they experienced was so great, and the solution, they were really desperately looking for a solution. So that was kind of what motivated me on. And the more I go along this journey, I just think there's such a huge opportunity with this product and in this industry.
Perfect segue for me. How big an opportunity? I mean, when you're lying awake at night dreaming, how big an exit are you thinking of?
Well, I think we can definitely raise a Series A within the next 24 months if we, you know, when we grow our footprint and we have a scalable, repeatable sales model. I think we could do that at probably 5 to 10x of what we're talking about today.
Okay.
And so that would be 40 million at Series A. And then I think if we had an exit and we were continuing to be successful, it could be, I don't know, over north of 200 million, possibly, I don't know. But I do believe that the potential is absolutely massive. And, you know, that's why I dedicate so much of my time to this, because I'm a true believer in terms of the potential that it has.
Because you are, as I said before, a busy boy. And what we didn't discuss, what we should have, is he was once upon a time a Davy stockbroker. And I can see the natural progression, Davy stockbroker, and you're doing unified ordering.
Yeah. Well, I started off doing the graduate program in Davies when I came out of college. I did a master's in finance before I got into this business. And then I was working on the money broking desk, on the institutional money broking desk. And then, you know, just around that time was when the financial crash was happening. So when that happened, you know, the bonuses that we were able to get just went right down. And my brother was a chef, so I always wanted to work for myself. And I'm a natural entrepreneur, I think. And we just decided to go into business together. We opened Juniors on Bath Avenue. And we just got very lucky that it happened to be in the right place at the right time. The Aviva Stadium was just...
Yeah, people say lucky, but you chose, you see. So you actually made the right choice. Not necessarily just lucky.
I think in this case, we were just lucky because my brother's fiance lived on Bath Avenue and just this cafe came open there. Okay. It used to be a Greasy Spoon. We took it over. And then, like, when we opened there, Google, there was only 150 people working in Google. And within 3 or 4 years, it was just booming, the whole place. And we opened a new business every couple of years.
And this has nothing to do with what we've just been talking about, but it's kind of related, is you must be able to see the pain of smaller cafes and restaurants and all. Is it real?
Yeah, I would say, I was actually thinking about this. I would say this is the most difficult environment that I've seen in 16 years.
We had another person on a couple of episodes ago, and he's been in 25 years, and he said the worst ever.
Yeah. I just think it's like, you know, Bookaroo. It's when you add on all these small little incremental charges. When we started in 2008, there was no Deliveroo, there was no nothing, there was no all these little incremental costs that have been added. Now, the price of insurance, we're obviously still coming out of COVID. That was a whole period, and the government were very good during COVID. They gave us lots of support. But, you know, at 2022, I would say it was definitely the most difficult year in business that I've ever experienced, because we didn't know what was normal. So we didn't know what to plan for. And just the costs of all of, you know, staff costs, because there was such a shortage, we were paying up, you know, to keep the place open, because we, you know, our kitchen porter would have cost maybe 13 euros an hour, went to 16 euros an hour. Everything just jumped massively. And then the price of goods just started skyrocketing. Price of electricity started skyrocketing. So it was a real struggle to kind of just keep the lights on. And now, just as we were getting over that period, then the government changed the VAT from 9% to 13.5%, and that's just been a hammer blow for a lot of people. And I think people are probably just worn out. And I would say, you know, the profitability of businesses is very hard, and there's only so much you can just keep upping the price. And you have to understand, as a business owner, like, we agonize over price increases. We hate increasing prices for customers because, you know, you think, oh, is this going to be the price increase that finally scares them off? Like, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't do anything. And I think particularly in relation to the VAT level, Ireland is way out of kilter with the rest of Europe. Like, I was on holidays recently in Spain. They have a 10% flat VAT on restaurants. And that's for all food and drink. So we have 13.5% now on food and 23% on alcohol. So our effective VAT in restaurants is about 18%. So it's nearly double Spain. And it'd be much better, I think. You know, for me, when I was in, we started in 2008, we made money, we didn't pay ourselves an awful lot, and we reinvested and started opening other businesses, creating more employment. Along the way, we were paying for designers and artists and building contractors, planning consultants, everything, because, you know, the business was scaling. So it was a perfect kind of little ecosystem that was, you know, capitalism at work, you know, employing other people. And now, because of this, there's no profits, there's no reinvestment. So everybody's getting hurt, not just food suppliers and customers, but, you know, people who work in restaurants.
Further down the chain or across the chain or whatever.
I just think it makes no sense and it's not good for anybody.
We've got a final question we ask everybody. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
I think probably, I was thinking about this, probably Michael O'Leary.
Ah, and yet another. He comes up almost every week now. I think
I'm very vanilla with that choice. I might say as well, my brother is my business partner. Like, you know, everything that we've done together.
What is his name?
He's Paul McNerney. He actually changed his name to James when he got married. He took his wife's name very unusually.
So, you mean that he didn't become James McNerney, he became Paul James?
He became Paul James, yeah. So he took his wife's maiden name. So he's Paul James. But
That's very curious. We'd have to have him in to discuss that with him.
Yeah, you can see what he says about that. Yeah. But so probably, if I'm being, you know, sentimental, I would say my brother Paul, because, you know, everything we've done together, we fight like cats and dogs sometimes, but when we've worked well together, we can do some really good stuff.
Cool.
And then probably Michael O'Leary, just because he's an Irish guy who kind of took over a company that was, you know, probably languishing a little bit and had potential, and just turned it into this behemoth and did it in an Irish way with a sense of humor. And I like that, you know.
And if you don't like him, he'll tell you to F off.
Exactly, yeah.
That is Barry McInerney of Unify Ordering, and you can find out all about Unify Ordering on Spark Crowdfunding, and check it out there and take professional advice. Barry, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show. In business, controlling costs is essential. That includes your business, fleets, fuel costs. Maxall, a family-owned business since 1920, are big supporters of That Great Business Show. Maxall fuel cards offer tailored solutions for transport fleets of all sizes, delivering efficient fuel cost management for your business at over 700 service stations nationwide. The Maxall dedicated fuel card team wants to hear from you at maxall.ie/fuel cards.
That Great Business Show. Winner, highly commended award, Irish Podcast Awards.
That Great Business Show.
On That Great Business Show, we bring you many, many women founders and their great companies. It's part of what we do. Full gender balance across the podcast. However, despite this pipeline of brilliant businesses, it's a worldwide fact that women find it so hard to get funding. And that's despite research showing that women founded or led businesses are often more profitable. Awaken Angels is the only Island of Ireland women-led investment community built with women in mind, and they're having a summit. She Ventures, Ireland's first all-island summit for women founders, being held in Fermanagh. Mary McKenna and Denise McQuaid are part of the founders team at Awaken Angels, and they're here in studio with me now. Mary, Denise, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you. Super. Thank you. To be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you back because we had Awaken Hub here before when a raucous event, if I remember. There were five of you in. I think you were whacking each other.
We were just a little baby company back then. We're nearly 4 years old now.
And you are about to bring 250 founders and investors off to an island to have a confab and to see whether you can match investor and founder.
Yes. So She Ventures has been in development for about 12 months now.
That's Denise's voice.
So She Ventures has been in development for about 12 months now, and we had obviously built our Awaken Hub community, which is our community for women founders, and over since our launch in September of 2023 of Awaken Angels, we wanted to bring both of our communities together to really understand how they can collaborate, work together, and fuel success for women-led businesses across the island. So She Ventures has an incredible lineup. And we are taking over the island of Lustybeg, as you mentioned, in Fermanagh. And the reason we've done that is that we are very much making our speakers and all of the incredible insight and domain expertise that is coming out from those that we've asked to attend and share with our founding teams and with our investors. We want to theme the cabins across the island so people can get a very rich experience. And it's definitely not what one would describe death by PowerPoint. That's not what our hope is. It's very much to drive engagement, drive connectivity, and hopefully continue to grow that collaboration between both communities.
Have either or both of you managed to crack what is it that is making it difficult to raise cash for women founders? Mary?
So I think there's a real shortage of women investors. And so...
Is that an absence of cash? It's knowledge?
It's an absence of knowledge, I would say. Women have plenty of cash. And indeed, certainly in the UK, it's forecast that by 2025, women will own 60% of all the wealth on an intergenerational basis.
Really?
Yes. There's fascinating stats around the way that wealth, the shift in wealth ownership is moving globally, not just here in Ireland and the UK, but globally.
But both of you have spent a lot of time in the UK, and I obviously read the UK newspapers. It's such a different, their understanding of finance, the pages devoted to personal finance in the UK. It's a different culture. I often wonder, what is it about Ireland that we haven't got that?
Well, the wealth advisors don't even tell women about the asset class that is angel investing. They just decide themselves that it's too risky for women, so they don't tell them about it, which, if you're a woman, make you quite cross.
I could imagine, because the attitude there is it's okay for men. How weird. Mm-hmm. How weird.
Yeah, when I started angel investing nearly 10 years ago, and you've probably heard me tell this story many times, but many, many times I would have walked into a syndicate room or a room that was a meeting of angel investors, and I would be the only woman in there. apart from perhaps somebody's daughter that was handing out the badges and serving the wine. And when I started trying to have conversations with the men in the room, they would look at me and say, you know, like, she's not filled my glass, and like, why has she got a badge? And it would be really embarrassing. But then they realized that I was a tech person, and because a lot of them were rather elderly, mature men.
Male, pale and stale, I presume.
Yeah, the founders would come in, they would do their pitches, they would leave the room, and then everyone would look at me and say, so what does that business actually do, Mary? And I would explain it to them in layman's language, and then they'd make a call on whether they were going to invest or not.
So what did the two of you and your fellow angel venturers, how are you going to change the culture in Ireland?
Yeah, so Conal, this has been a labour of love for us for in its development of Awaken Angels over the last nearly 2 years. Obviously, we were very keen not just to enable our founder community, Awaken Hub, to continue to grow and for the companies to develop. We wanted to address the barrier for raising finance. And one of the things that we felt very strongly was that this asset class is normally looked as an asset class for the few and not the many. So we very much set about developing Awaken Angels to address three key pillars. Firstly was democratization, so that you could come on board as an angel investor with a minimum ticket of £2,000, €2,000, $2,000, that you would have a safe space to go on an education and learning journey, which is we have developed a 9-module education program to enable brand new angel investors to understand the dynamics of the asset class and how to feel equipped to make informed decisions about the investments that they made. And the third piece was community, because obviously we know collective decisions make better decisions, and women are much better at having those conversations and actually really understanding the dynamics of the businesses that they're investing in. And not only that they would be able to invest money, but how they can add extensive value to the companies as they continue to grow and scale.
And when you are talking in one single sentence to people about an angel investor, how do you describe it and what an angel investor is?
An angel investor to me in running the 9-module training program is a very curious individual. So they have the ability to look at varying types of businesses that we bring to them, and they get excited about some of the opportunities that they have their own career and domain expertise in, so they know where they can completely add value and that they can potentially open up commercial conversations or strategic conversations for the companies that they're looking at. But then we have an angel investor who's curious about some of the new technologies that are coming through and want to educate themselves, upskill and add the value in terms of the monetary terms, but also just being wanting to learn a little bit more about the unknown.
And I presume both of you wave huge big flags to say you can, you may, you might lose every penny of it. Exactly.
Yes.
So therefore, that is our, we've now put out the warning, take professional advice. But go back, Denise, if you wouldn't mind, to your course. Is that a free course?
So it comes in conjunction with joining the community. So we've been very lucky in the partnerships that we have developed with British Business Bank and Intertrade Ireland.
Who is or what is the British Business Bank?
So the British Business Bank are a bank that are formulated from the UK government to support the growth and ambition for businesses. And obviously with us being registered in the working across the island of Ireland, Intertrade Ireland are supporting our angels, our brand new angels, from an ROI perspective, a Republic of Ireland perspective, and British Business Bank are supporting our new angels.
We kind of made things really hard for ourselves by starting off from day one as cross-border. It would have been a lot easier if we just picked one single jurisdiction, but we are gluttons for punishment.
And it gives you 1.6 million extra people to choose from. And
or
Northerners are savvy investors as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, of course, the other way around as well. So where is the activity coming from? Actually, now that you mention it, who is more active, North or South?
It's actually really, really interesting in terms of the new angels that have come on board with us. We're on our third training cohort at the moment, and it's actually a 50-50 split, which is really surprising. And we didn't know which jurisdiction was going to come up with the most, but actually we have nearly all of the counties represented. So we have a new angel investor in nearly every county across the island, which is some of them. We have multiple from the counties, but we definitely have an angel representing the new wave of investors across the island in each county.
And for those who are, sorry, Mary,
a number from the United States.
Now, how's that happening?
We've been in the US 5 times in the last 12 months. So we've been in New York 3 or 4 times. Joe Kennedy very kindly hosted us in Boston in February this year.
Fancy.
In the British Ambassador's residence in Beacon Hill. So, you know, it's difficult to say no if Joe invites you to come to a gathering of high net worths and asks you to open your checkbook and support some women in Ireland. You know, I mean, that's a... So putting in those hard yards and actually be, as you will know all about, being in America and being seen at things and being back and back and back so people don't think that you're just going to show up once a year.
Because one of your pals, Miriam Pierce, well, she has done one of our events, sorry, one of our podcasts, where she did the New York Minute. She's AKA Fierce Pierce, isn't that right?
That's and Susan, my good Susan God. Hayes, christened her Fierce Pierce, yeah.
And if you do not turn up at events in New York, you're missing the point. You've got to, just to show that you're there. Now, back to and something else that you mentioned about the US investors to me before, is they are looking towards retirement, which is very curious.
Yeah, so a lot of our experienced investors, both men and women who've come into the community, because obviously we cater for both sides. So with our 9-module training program, we cater for the complete novice, and that is supported by British Business Bank and Intertrade Ireland.
Man and woman?
Man, only women on the brand new.
Okay.
And then on the experience side, we both have men and women. So our diaspora, and as Mary said, the amount of time we've spent in the US has given us an opportunity to engage with a number of our diaspora, both young and up and coming in their careers from a new angel investor perspective. But our experienced angel investors are very much looking towards Ireland and spending more time here in their retirement. And they've probably been out of Ireland for a significant period of time, but they're looking to awaken angels really to diversify their portfolio of women-led businesses, but also wanting to spend more time in Ireland and to support those companies to do their global scale and ambition back into the US. So they're bringing a lot of smart money and smart connectivity for the founders that have that global ambition and that US as an export market for them from the beginning. So it's a really advantageous piece for our founders to have that connectivity.
And your course is 9 months. But it's not 9 months intense.
No, it's once a month. So we run it at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday night. And as I say, we're on cohort 3. We had originally thought that we may move into an online e-learning module with the program. But actually, the connectivity and the community that's building and the momentum that's building around brand new angels learning from each other and getting to know each other. And some great strategic partnerships have happened out of coming on the program together, but then leveraging their connectivity for their own businesses and for their own careers. So it's been a real sense of joy to see that. So
and go on, tell me about the level of engagement, because you're dying to tell me about the level of engagement.
I have to say the level of engagement has been phenomenal. Of our cohort one, really proud to say that of the 25 that came on to cohort one, 11 of them invested money into the deals that we've just closed. And of those 11, 7 of them invested more than the minimum ticket size of 2K. So we all thought that they would come in with their first, and they got brave and felt empowered to make bigger bets on the companies coming through. And then many of them, 5 of them in total, invested in both deals. So they are now sitting with their first investments in their first angel investment portfolio.
And probably not sleeping at all because they're worried about the performance and how the companies are going.
Yeah.
Is that how
they're
it works?
Great companies, actually. So they'll be very relaxed. I should think they'll be thinking about their millions that they're going
to
make.
Am I allowed to ask about the young woman who might be in college and who is investing with you, or is that strictly verboten?
Yeah, no, not at all, not at all. And our angels come from all walks of life. We have those that are at sea level in their career. We have those that have been
not
building.
At sea, it's at C-suite level.
C-suite level, yeah,
they're
sorry.
Not at sea.
Yeah, no, C-suite level within their career. We have owners of SME businesses across the island.
Founders
who are learning the journey from both sides, how to be an investor, but also how to educate themselves.
Which is actually kind of wise.
Like, yeah.
Really, really
see
really
it from
wise.
The other side, yeah?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's a really smart move on many of their behalfs because they know that they will ultimately need to be on the negotiation side of company valuations and understanding deal terms. And actually, our training program facilitates that. But we have one particular great university student who's in her final year, who has invested in one of the first companies that we invested in. And she's saving hard to make her second investment. So we're very, very proud of the journey that they've gone on, because it is actually making sure she's looking after her financial wealth from a very early stage in university, but very passionate about the change in the landscape. And hopefully herself wants to be a founder one day. So is really educating herself from the flip side, from the beginning.
I think I would love to have a chat with that lady, if you would be so kind as to send her our way. So I think that's really interesting. Now, tell me about some, you're telling me all the nice stuff. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the difficulties. Where are women falling down? Why aren't they, I'll come back to this one about 100 times. Why are they not more motivated? What is it? Where is the difficulty? Mary?
I can't honestly answer the question. I don't really know. Like I've been asked this time and time again over the past 8 or 10 years. I don't know. I mean, I think it is just about women do have a different attitude to risk. Therefore, that's why the training plays a really important part, because in some ways it de-risks things because they understand it a lot better.
But is it different in the States? I mean, you just told me that women in the States are willing to put their cash into as angels. Different attitude. So it is cultural, is it?
Yes, it is cultural. And Ireland's far, far behind most of the rest of Europe as well in terms of the number of women angel investing. I mean, we talk about creating a movement of women angels. But in order to do that, you have to create the community first, because we were starting from a very, very low base. And indeed, we were told by people that have been practicing in the angel investment space in Ireland for a number of years that it was impossible to bring any more women in, because everything that could be done had been done. Well, that's clearly not the case, because such a large number have joined in the last 6 months. But we are at the beginning. We're at the beginning of what will eventually become a movement.
Well, what is the vision? I mean, if you're smallish now, in 3, 4, 5 years' time, where will you be?
When we started to look at addressing the funding issue, we'd originally thought that we may set up our own fund. So that was originally where we thought our direction of travel would take us. And I'm not sure that it won't still take us there in the longer term. But for us, it was very much, we needed, as Mary had said, to stop those rooms being full of only men, and the great innovation that's been developed by women in this country needed to have that early stage seed funding in order for us to be able to really prove out that the growth and ambition of women-led businesses in Ireland is as equal, if not better, to men. And that was really important to us.
Does it need government action somehow, some kind of push?
Yeah, I mean, it does. And
what would you like?
Well, for us, obviously, as I'd mentioned, British Business Bank and Intertrade Ireland have come on, and what they have done in supporting us is to pay the membership fee and the training component for any brand new angel investor coming into our community. And that has been game changing. So it allows our new angels to commit to the training program, to deploy their first ticket and to start to gain confidence.
I read your website. You actually have to undertake to invest if you're going to go on that course and get it free.
You do. So we have asked that each brand new angel puts in their 2K into an escrow account with our legal partners, because what we wanted to ensure is that you were coming on board with the commitment to take that first step and that leap. And actually, that has not been a barrier. So,
was that you going to ask you? Was that kind of a worry too much?
No, we felt strongly that, if we were actually going to commit to the investment side, and actually we can onboard angel investors, we can train them, but we needed to see that they had skin in the game too. And that they felt that they were coming into this to start the journey. We are not a place for you to come if you're only going to make one investment a year. We will be cost prohibitive for you in 12 months' time. This is where you're starting to build your angel investment portfolio and look at this asset class in a much more robust and rigorous manner.
Also, if someone comes to us and they say to Denise or to me after 12 or 24 months, okay, so I've now seen 60 companies pitching and I'm not interested in investing in any of them, we'll give them their $2,000 back, because it's clear if they didn't see anything that they liked in 60 or 65 companies, they're never going to see anything that they like.
How many companies have we done so far?
We have 3 pitches a month. So we either hold our pitch nights online or we hold them in person, but we always have a professional video made of the pictures so that it goes back into the community and anybody that wasn't able to be there can watch them back.
And those in-person pitches are in Dublin or Belfast or whereabouts?
We've actually been very determined to spread them across the country. So we did our November pitch event in Dublin. We did February in Belfast. We did March in Galway. And we will be heading to the south, Cork or Kerry, Clare, that region in later in the year.
And who pitches up, say in Dublin, do you get far more people than you do in Galway? Or?
No, we've had a full house actually.
Oh, fabulous. I love this.
We've been really lucky because our training program has been done online, it has allowed anyone from the, you know, from any county to join us. So we had a full house in March and just before Easter in Galway. And we had three companies. We always give a very diverse range of companies that come and pitch. And we always try and spread them. So we had Northern Ireland represented, Mayo in the West, and Galway in that event. But we will have a very diverse range of types of businesses. So we had a product-based business, a deep tech-based business, and a B2B marketplace. So there'll always be a great range and diverse options something for everybody, and the options for the investors to really have a view and educate themselves on new and exciting innovation.
And if it all goes well, it's about a capital gain. It's not a dividend. So this is now you're going to the roulette table, really, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, investing in this asset class is risky, and it, you know, can take 5 to 7 years to realize any returns, if any, right? And but we've
been a bit luckier than that, actually, Denise.
Yeah.
I was a happy person.
One of my exits was 4 years, 3 months, and the other one was 2 years and 9 months.
One of the problems, though, is, and it's not particular to your organization, it's in general, is the exit, trying to find a mechanism to get out. And I know that with Spark crowdfunding even, is that's a problem, is that it's the exit. Anything that you can do on that?
Yeah, so all of our companies that come to pitch to our investor community have come through our Awaken Hub community, which is our community for women founders across the island. So we've spent a lot of time working with these companies in terms of their go-to-market, in terms of understanding their competition, to understand their value proposition and their differentiating factors, and for them to be able to build a defensible business. And we talked to them at a very early stage about what that exit would look like. They may not be funding and coming to the community from a fundraising point of view, but we very much strategically position them for that exit over time.
We look for women that have got a global mindset from day one, and our own networks extend across the whole of Europe, and certainly the USA. And that's one of the benefits of bringing in investors from overseas, is that we look for people that are going to bring us more than money. So they're going to open some of those doors, make some of those introductions, and make sure that an exit is more likely.
And Digital Irish being one of the backers, big backers, and for those who don't know it, we've already done some interviews with them, but I think they have a 5,000 person email list, and they are really super people. And
super
and hugely connected. We're going to finish, I think, by asking you both for your hires in a heartbeat. Mary McKenna, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
So I mentioned to you a little earlier that we were in Boston and New York City in February this year. We actually took a young person with us who is a social influencer. And my God, did she put our numbers of viewers through the roof. So my vote's going to go to, there's a social influencer in County Tyrone. Her name is Olivia McVeigh. We probably can't afford her, but if we could, she'd be our first hire.
Well, that is now makes an awful lot of sense to me, because as you say, hire her and get international access, because
the reels
there
and things
are
that she made
no
in
borders.
Seconds on her phone, which would have taken us days to do as old people, was just transformative.
Not old people, people of a certain age.
Yes.
Olivia, you're hired. Denise, who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, I think one of the people that I've admired is Serena Williams. Obviously, her transition from a professional sports athlete to being very focused in investing in women-led businesses.
Have you met her?
I have never met her, but we have a lot of sports technologies and some great products that are focused on athletes and performance and prevention recovery. So we've got a great sports tech portfolio within our community. And we also have a lot of great products and services that I think she would be interested in investing
in. And it's not so much the Serena that you're trying to get Serena. Serena needs you.
Serena needs us and some of the amazing sports tech businesses across the island of Ireland. We could definitely get her on board and investing in them.
So that is fantastic. Anybody who wants to get in touch with you, I mean, there are one, two, are there, how many websites are there? It seems to go on forever.
Yeah, so you can come to us through awakenangelshq.com, whether you're fundraising and a founder, there's an application form on there to come through. And then if you are an investor, you can come through that platform too. We're incredibly active across our LinkedIn and social media. So
I have noticed.
Find us online 24 hours a day.
And it's Awaken Hub will also get you. So Awaken Angels, Awaken Hub. And yeah, chase them down. And hopefully you'll come back to us possibly in a year with some major sales. How about that? Imagine if you managed to flip a company within a year.
We will definitely give you a call if we manage to do that.
Okay. That is Denise McQuaid, August, Mary McKenna. Thank you both for coming in to us. And huge success, hope in the future. Thank you for joining us on That Great Business Show. Maxall, a family-owned business since 1920, launched Homegrown at Maxall to support local growing businesses by distributing their products across the Maxall network in the Republic of Ireland. In partnership with Champion Green, Maxall invites local SMEs and startups in the food and drink sector to enter year two of the Homegrown at Maxall program. Listen back to previous winners on episode 153 of That Great Business Show. And for more details, see maxall.ie/homegrown.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
All you regular listeners know that Big Red Cloud, Ireland's number one cloud accounting software for small business owners, is a big supporter of That Great Business Show. And thanks to them, we bring you Business 101, a mini-series about setting up and growing your business. Tina Scheel is founder of the Bookkeeping Academy, and she joins me in studio with Ian Hobbs, sales manager at Big Red Cloud. Tina, Ian, thank you for joining me on That Great Business Show.
It's lovely to be here. Thanks.
Well, that's the sound of Tina. Tina, pray tell, what does your business do? The Bookkeeping Academy, and it's only one of your two businesses, isn't that right?
That is right. So I have two businesses, Bookkeeping Academy of Ireland and its sister company, Smart Training. Yes, of Ireland. And very important when we think of our guaranteed Irish, like our businesses like Big Red Cloud, we like to support the whole Irish focus. So our sister company then is Smart Training. And what we do is we focus on training and upskilling, particularly in the area of accounts and payroll, as well as leadership and management training. We're extremely busy and we really believe that there has never been more demand for education and training in our sector.
Because you brought in with you a whole heap of stats, which proves something I think we all know is there is a big problem, a shortage of skilled labour. And by skilled labour, we're not talking about fellas who have moved from shovels to the JCB. You're actually talking about people who are professionally trained, as you do.
Correct. That's exactly right. So at the moment, we're in the middle of a perfect storm with regard to recruitment and also retention of staff. So it's not just finding the staff, it's keeping those staff as well. So on the one hand, we're in a time of very rapid innovation and change, and any business that's standing still is going backwards. And on the other hand, we're seeing unprecedented demand for staff. That's in accounts, construction, finance, hospitality, and so on. Now, every year, SULIS, and SULIS, who are the government agency who look after and lead further education and training, they publish a report and they look at vacancies that are difficult to fill. So they're showing up to 60% of the vacancies that are being advertised at the moment are classed as difficult to fill. And there's a further 13% that are either too difficult to fill or have not been filled.
And luckily for them, you exist, because that is what you do, isn't it?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And following on from their own quote in their report, they said that for business and finance roles, they said that upskilling and reskilling will be essential across business and finance occupations in the coming years, so as to successfully navigate changes resulting from digitalization, automation, and increased focus on sustainable finances. So to answer the problems that businesses have, if they're able to embrace that training culture, they're really going to be able to help themselves in three different ways. So they're going to be able to upskill existing staff. They're going to be able to recruit and train staff that they may not have been able to train to recruit previously.
Now, I'm going to pick you up on that point, because you mentioned this to me before, and I thought that was a really interesting one. You can go broader, because you don't need the person necessarily with the skills. But I was quick to retort, I think was the term, when I said, yeah, you train them and I'll take them.
And that is, but do you know, if we look at it as an economy as a whole, the better skilled our workforce is, the better it's going to be for everybody.
And that's all agreed.
Yes.
Except if I'm hiring and training, and if you come up and rob my staff, I'll kill you. Because it'll break my heart.
Yeah. What does Richard Branson say? He says, "Look after them well enough that they don't want to leave."
Okay, that's a fair answer.
So
fair answer.
I think I'll go with that, because I think he's won a few accolades along the way. So I think I'll agree with him. But the point about that is, though, on the recruitment side, is that you can look and you can see, right, the attitudes of this person are right for us. They're a right fit for our business. So we'll take them in and we will train them ourselves on the skills that they don't have, because it's much easier to train skills than it is to train attitude.
Now, are you talking about your company will train that for other people? That is what you do, isn't it?
That's exactly what we do.
You're not just training for yourselves.
Yes. No, that's exactly it. So I suppose that gives us a very good into how businesses can be assisted. So there is massive support out there for small businesses. And I just want to give you an example of a collaboration with Big Red Cloud and KWETB. So that would be the Kildare Wicklow Education and Training Board. So as a result of these Sullis reports and saying that business and finance needed to be supported in the line of training, so those innovative and creative people down at KWETB, they collaborated with Big Red Cloud, who, as we have said, have create those accounts and payroll software specifically for and very much supporting Irish SMEs. So they came together to create a suite of courses to fill the needs of SMEs within the accounts, payroll, that whole area. So the suite of courses includes accounts, payroll, automation, budgeting and inventory management. And there's different levels of those. And those courses are delivered online at the learner's own pace. So straight away, that reduces the problem that people, rural livers, have with actually getting access to training. And most importantly for the SMEs, they are fully funded. So let me say that one more time. The ETB pays for the course access, software, the assessment, the certification, and the support. All of that is paid for, in our instance, by KWETB.
Do you know what you've just reminded me of there is, I hear it very, very often, particularly women who are trying to get back into the workforce after having children or looking after the family. This sounds like an ideal training opportunity, an ideal entree at a higher skill.
Now, and you are to the absolute heart of my passion for training and education.
And we didn't discuss this beforehand.
We did not. So that was the route that I took myself. So I reskilled in my 30s. We did mention earlier that I'm of the vintage that did my leave insert in the 80s.
We just always say a while ago.
It wasn't an assumed thing that you would go to college. So I didn't. But move forward then into my 30s, and I actually worked through ISME SkillNets. They at the time had a one step up program, which was specifically for people like me. I had three smallies at home And I was able to go through accounting technician. I was able to do my business degree and I was able to do my ACCA exams. That was a life changer for me. And of course, that's where my passion for the further education and training piece comes in.
Back then, it couldn't have been online, was it?
It was not online. Yeah. No,
so now it's even easier.
Yes. But the idea of, I suppose, the pandemic really brought forward for us something that we should have been investigating years ago. And that was we have a lot of rural dwellers. We have a lot of people with other either roles, let them be in or outside the home. And we need to be encouraging those people back into the workplace. And it is very encouraging that we are getting more ladies back into the workplace.
And to keep them living in rural Ireland, where they love, they want to belong, and it keeps communities alive.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
There's a fellow over there, Colleen, he's nodding furiously there. you seem to agree with what we're having a chat about here.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, the courses are open to the whole country. So I know Tina mentions KWETB, but that's not necessarily grounded to, you know, to that area. You can sign up from anywhere you choose within the country, and you don't have to be a customer of Big Red Cloud to do so. It's open to anybody.
But you're actually just reminded me again of something there, is that you can do this kind of tourism thing. You can be in Donegal and attend a KWEBT.
Yeah.
Because somebody else told me that, I can't remember where she was, it she who said it to me, and there are some particularly good courses down in Clare. So if you want to check out the Clare ones. But you also, with Big Red Cloud, you are, it's modular, is it? Or can you learn modularly?
Modularly, you can, absolutely. I mean, Tina does the full course with you. She's there as a support as you go through it. So all queries and questions will be answered via email or remotely in that sense. It's something you can do in your own time, or if your employee wants you to do it in office time, absolutely you can. When we have new starters at our company, every one of them starts by taking on these courses at the beginner's level, intermediate later, and then onto the more advanced and professional ones. And it just does wonders for them, because again, accounting software, we've made it simple, but accounting as a subject is very, very difficult. And anything that can take the pain out of that and give someone the confidence to move forward is just such a great help and relief. And the beauty of our system, I suppose, when you look at it, and not every account software has it, we have two lovely buttons down the end. They read change and they read delete. You don't have to go and journal it out or try and figure out and call the finance minister because you made a mistake and it won't remind you every day that you did it. You can change it, edit it, delete it, start again.
So, Tina, tell me, to go from zero to hero, to actually become relatively competent, a day, a week, a year, excite me.
Yes. So the way that we do it is, I'm just going to give you the example of our accounts courses. So we have an introduction, an intermediate, and an advanced. We would say that we give you 8 weeks on each of those courses. You're fully supported on that. We have multiple support sessions.
8 weeks full-time or?
No, 8 weeks part-time. So we're generally looking at people who are already working or have other roles that take up most of their time. So we would say that you're looking 24 to 28 hours to actually complete one of these courses. And in that duration of time, you'll have done 3 case studies. So we split it into theory and practical. And the practical, of course, you do on your Big Red Cloud software. Your theory side then is cemented by what you've done on your Big Red Cloud. And in fairness to the guys, the software is so intuitive. It's really, really good, easy software to use. But let's say if I try to teach you something about VAT, or I try to teach you something about RCT, and you say, yeah, that's great, I kind of get the gist of that. It's not until you go to put it onto the software that you say, now I know what they're saying, now I know what they're doing. So this is why it's a 1-2. It's knowing the theory, but then being able to apply that. And you can take that anywhere. So we suggest that if you're taking it nice and handy, 2 or 3 hours a week, you're going to do that in 8 weeks. I have learners who will go in for a weekend and they will absolutely nail it, and they will have the assignment back on my desk on a Monday morning. So you can do it, but I would say you're looking 24 to 28 hours. What does your work life look like? What does your home life look like? That's how long it's going to take you to get through that course then.
Do you get excited by that? I've had people on the program who do get excited by that.
Yeah.
That is a weird thing.
I'm going to say, no, not my favourite subject. And I suppose coming from that background where I was an adult learner myself, I really know how to make things very, very simple for people. And where we don't go into all the corners of what could happen, we really do cover the basics of what I consider to be like 90% of the transactions that people are going to actually implement in their workplace. And that's really what we're after.
And is it certificated? Or do you get a rosette at the end of it, do you? Or?
So luckily for us, Big Red Cloud are actually a certification body.
Are you?
Yes, they are.
How did you get that?
Again, I wouldn't have worked in the background to achieve the certification.
But, you can give the ticks.
Yeah. I would say Mark and Porig would give you more information on that award, and we get to hand out the certificates.
Mark collects those things, but I thought it was for running and jumping.
That's for sure. Yeah, he's too many of them at this point.
And believe me, I could not help him with that. So they are approved by the ETB and by Sullis to be a certification body. So it would be like where we'll say for the Digital Marketing Institute, they can certify. So it's an industry certification. And really, because of the popularity of Big Red Cloud, that's a great thing to have in your CV. And the beauty of it is, if you send it in to me and I mark it, on that very day, you will get your cert. There's none of this thing of waiting for 6 months for your cert and saying, can I have a letter to say I did this course? You will have your cert like that because it's all, what is it? Automated. Of course it is. And that's what we're looking for. So the learners get the proof and the evidence, and they can run in to their employer with that, to their interview with that. It's absolutely amazing.
And they can move job with it.
They could move job with it. And I suppose, again, for me, a very humbling part of what it is, we look for feedback every time we finish a set of 8 weeks. And, you know, people will come back to us and they'll say, you cannot believe what this has done for my confidence. And of course, the one we always love to hear is, I'm just gone back to work and I've secured a new job. And they're the ones that we, and it's so, it's exciting, but it's very humbling to see that you can have that impact. And really, you know, that balance between our theory and that really, really good software that employers are actually looking for. It's an amazing combination.
How many people go through your courses? I mean, we're talking about tens or hundreds or thousands or?
We are definitely talking about, we're talking about hundreds. So over 2 years, we have almost 2,000 people certified. Yeah.
That is superb.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say that people benefit even when they don't get to certify. But getting the confidence to come back into education, getting the confidence to say, yeah, I can do this, to certify your experience, all of those are really good things that we can offer.
So where should anybody go to learn more?
So obviously we would love everybody, because I believe, coming from the background that I do, that every business owner needs to understand their accounts. They don't need to be able to put in their returns. They need to be able to understand. So that being the case, I would say we would love everyone to come and do our courses. So you can either go to bigredcloud.com/training, or you can go to fetchcourses.ie. So that's that is the public website for all of the training that is available publicly.
That's very interesting, Ed. You know
it is.
I have been doing this for a while, as they say. I've never heard of that one. Fetchcourses.ie.
Fetchcourses. So that's fetchcourses.ie. And if you go in there and you search for Big Red, you'll find all our courses.
And that's a public
there.
One, is it? Public,
absolutely
public.
Public. And okay. this is a drum that I beat a lot. So this is publicly funded courses that anybody can do. Now, some of them will have, you know, you must be in such and such an area. Some of them will say you must have certain requirements. But there are literally thousands of funded courses on there. So people really should be looking on there with regard to getting on to our courses. So that's bigredcloud.com/training or fetchcourses.ie and search Big Red.
Final question before I go down a little rabbit hole, but I'm going to go down a little rabbit hole. Do people outside of the jurisdiction apply for those, or can they? Could somebody say Northern Ireland or somebody in Britain or somebody apply?
Very interesting question. You actually have to have an Irish PPS number. Okay. So we would have, and very welcome and very happy to see a lot of our Ukrainian counterparts who have their PPS number here. Anyone who has an Irish PPS number.
But a PPS number in Australia, PPS number in America?
Must be an Irish PPS
number. No, but it'd be a PPS number that they carry with them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you have that that PPS number.
I swear to God, you learn something new on this podcast every day.
Well, indeed. And someone might hit me with a hammer when I leave the studio here and say, no, that's not the case.
No, we can write the story.
Yeah. When we see our little dots of where people are signing in from, there are people signing in and the people signing in on their holidays even because they enjoy it so
much.
That's
not a holiday. That is Tina Scheel, and she be the boss of the bookkeepingacademy.ie, is that right?
That's it.
And the previous owner of the Voice is Ian Hobbs, sales manager at Big Red Cloud. Thank you both for joining us on That Great Business Show.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. De Facto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. De Facto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show.
And that is it for episode 190 of That Great Business Show. Great business insights and inspiration as always. It's a regular recommendation to all in business to find a mentor. So make sure to check out mentorswork.ie to unlock the full potential of your business. It's a government-funded mentoring program designed to fuel the growth of your business, no matter the sector or the size. And every week we're hearing back from listeners who are signing up to this great program. Why not go for it yourselves? Sign up for email updates at thatgreatbusinessshow.com and we will send you your own personal copy of the podcast. Share us, like us, and give us 5-star reviews. It really, really does help. And of course, like you, we're in business. So why not advertise with us? Contact us anytime through LinkedIn. We record here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where today's studio engineer is Connor Eustace. A huge thanks to him for his professionalism. And later, studio manager Peter Rice and post-production engineer Neil Horner woof at their woofers to ensure we remain the world's best-sounding business podcast. So from me, Conall Moran, buíochas to you all, agus slán tamall.